Hello, everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 103 for February 1st, first day of the short month. Chance Watson bringing you the news today. And this episode is sponsored by Bank CDA. Bank CDA, what is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com. I think I drove past a Bank CDA recently. Where was I? Hayden? Might be one in Hayden, even though it's Bank CDA. In any case, hey, everybody, I wanted to give you one reminder as well. For all you sports fans out there, the ones who follow, you know, high school sports, prep sports in our area, all things sports, I would go over on Facebook and check out the Press Sports Facebook page, newly created for folks who are just looking for only sports news in our area. So anywhere from Bonner's Ferry to, you know, Kootenai, those areas, the Indian Reservation, the Coeur d'Alene Indian Reservation, anywhere in between, if you're looking for high school sports or regional stuff from Gonzaga, that is the place to go. I would go onto Facebook right now and check out the Press Sports page. Give them a like and follow, and that way you can stay up on our local news. Other than that, gang, listeners, I gotta say, I was at home recently. I like to stop in at my dad's place over in Post Falls and check out, see how he's doing. And I was going through my old bedroom and I ran across some stuff that pulled from my grandpa's house. You know, it's a situation where we had to, you know, sell off the home after he passed and that kind of thing. And came across an old newspaper from Harlan, Kentucky. If I haven't mentioned on the podcast before, you didn't listen to the episode, I have some roots going back to Harlan, Kentucky. My grandmother is from there. Have some kin out there, out yonder. And it was so cool because I ran across, I had seen this photo before, this photo that I'm about to tell you about. I had seen it before in digital and it was scanned already, but I had never actually come across the original photo. And it was actually in a newspaper. I didn't know that. It was a picture of my grandparents with Ronald Reagan, like standing right next to the man. And I thought that was super, I just think that was super cool. Like, I, you know, there are some people, whether you liked Ronald Reagan or not, you know, politicians, it's just that idea of meeting a famous person. You know, I ran into Weird Al Yankovic one time. That's, everybody's got that famous story. Like, you know what? I ran into Seal on a plane or, you know, something like that. Whatever. Whatever it may be, you have that one story of like, I ran into that celebrity one time and I thought it was super cool. Especially like that's an opportunity. Like I have a bucket list that I keep of like famous people I'd like to meet before one of us pass away. At the top of the list, anybody who's been listening to the show for long enough knows that I'm a Trekkie. I'd really like to meet Patrick Stewart, before one of us kicks the bucket. I don't think I'm any closer to doing that. I haven't really, put any Star Trek conventions or X-Men conventions or anything that Shakespeare, he's a huge Shakespearean, any of those on, so I haven't made it to that. But I thought that was so cool, that they were able to meet, Ronald Reagan himself. One of the more universally liked presidents that we've had. Remember back in the day when everybody agreed on politics? No, neither did I. At least not in my lifetime. My lifetime, politics has always been very, very complicated and very divisive, and usually ends with someone shouting. And I'm not sure why, but that's how that goes. I've been trying to stay off of national news. It only seems to rile people up. And why get angry over something that I can't control? And generally, usually, more often than not, doesn't affect me. So one of the things that I've been doing, I've been going back. Everybody's got that TV show that you play in the background at the house. You don't watch it. You know, you're not sitting there watching every episode, watching every line of dialogue. But you've got that familiar, that happy show. We've talked a lot about sitcoms in the show, on this show a lot. And one of them that I've been playing in the background while I do stuff, King of the Hill. It's not the first time that I've ran through this, but there's, you know, each season's like 30 episodes, something like that. And it's just nice to, you know, have something on in the background. And I love that every episode's its own unique story most of the time. And it's a great show. I know the premise gets old. Anybody who's well, it's just the same thing every time. It's just Hank and Peggy, you know, not knowing how to deal with modern day people. And that's true. More often than not, it is. But it's still funny. It's lighthearted. But I recently learned that King of the Hill is getting a reboot. Well, it said reboot in the article. I think actually it's just it'll follow, you know, Bobby Hill when he's older and that kind of thing. You're familiar with the show. So I'm pretty stoked about that. I'll tell you what. I need to reach out to somebody. Anybody, any listeners on here that sell propane or propane accessories, reach out. I'd love to give you a discounted ad on the show. I don't know how I'll finagle that to Clint, the supreme overlord of the press. Hey, Chance, why are you giving this ad away for basically nothing? Well, it's because they sell propane and propane and he'd just a stern finger out of his office. He'd probably still let me do it because he'd appreciate that I went that far for a joke. But at the same time, we are trying to make money. So there's only so much money that we can forego in order to have a great joke. And this one would be mildly funny at best. The other thing that I've been listening to when I'm not in my house, I think I've mentioned this on the show before. Josh, my normal co-host for the day, he took a vacation day today. He's a huge fan of the Michael Connelly books, you know, Bosch and the Lincoln Lawyer and that kind of thing. I've been burning through the audiobooks for Bosch. I've reached the point now where Bosch and Mickey Holler, the Lincoln Lawyer, more famously known because of the movie with Matthew McConaughey, that kind of thing. I've been burning through that. God, it's such a good series. Such a good series. I recommend it. If you're a huge fan of podcasts, you're probably a huge fan of audiobooks. So I definitely recommend all of those. I can't recommend a specific book because they're all quite good. And it just follows, you know, it's seemingly never-ending exploits of Detective Hieronymus Bosch. And he recently just got, in the book that I just read, Nine Dragons, he just rescued his daughter. Yeah. Sad state of affairs. But he got the bad guy. So, you know, there's always that. And he links up with Mickey Holler. And I know that they're going to do a show again. If you haven't watched it, so obviously the Lincoln Lawyer, there's the movie, and I think there's a Netflix TV show now. Bosch is, the show Bosch is on Amazon Prime, and I think that show's over, but they're doing a reboot, or not a reboot, but a spinoff of Bosch. It's going to follow his daughter around, I think, and there might even be some, you know, cross-section there for when, you know, Harry and Mickey meet. So if you're any Lincoln Lawyer fans out there, this also ties into it pretty well. So pretty stoked about that. Other than that, gang, I think we should start thinking about diving into the news. I know Valentine's Day is on the horizon, but that's depending on I would love to bring all of my previous co-hosts on and like get their read on what holidays they like. I know that listeners have tuned in and heard my opinions on, you know, not a huge Thanksgiving fan, kind of turkey's dry, I don't like it. Huge Halloween fan, love it. I love all the hijinks and the costumes and all that kind of stuff. Christmas is fine. I love that everybody, you know, regardless of, you know, the reason, the time of year, people at least use it as an excuse to be nice to each other and give gifts and show that they care about people. So that's nice. Valentine's Day, on the other hand, I think I might have to go with, you know, hide off of that 70s show on this one. It's definitely like created by marketers to make some money. That's definitely, you know, but that being said, you know, holidays make good money for restaurants and businesses and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's not all bad, I guess, even though it is, you know, basically a consumer holiday like Black Friday, like, okay, day after Thanksgiving, we've just all collectively agreed that we're going to go spend a lot of money on this day. We're going to go shopping. In some cases, we're going to get in fights with other grown adults over, you know, an air fryer or a big screen TV, something like that. We're going to get in, actually, you know, with the pandemic, you know, if there's anything, you know, I love those articles that come out. They're like, you know, things that actually came that were positive out of the pandemic. And, you know, most people were like, you know, a lot of employers have realized that people can work from home, and that's a good thing. Okay, well, maybe adding to that list, probably farther lower down the list, but I think a lot of businesses like Walmart, for example, have realized that you don't need, you know, the parade of people just the riot of people just crashing through the doors and grabbing everything in sight that has a sale tag on it. The same thing can be accomplished by with a week-long sale or, you know, online sales, that kind of thing. So, yeah. Maybe that's something to look positive to. If you're looking for a refreshing, locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg, Idaho. The tap room is open 7 days a week. They offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack and food options. Make sure to mention the podcast in the tap room to receive $1 off your first beer. Just walk her up, say, "Hey, heard about you guys from the North Idaho Now podcast. Where's my cheap beer?" Just kidding. Don't say that. Don't say that. Be nice about it. But they would appreciate it, and we'd appreciate it too. To learn more about them, visit radiobrewingcompany.com. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole. All right, that takes us into quarterly and post-falls press headlines, starting with Saturday, January 29th, Courage in the Face of Danger. This is by Bill Bewley. In his 5 years with the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Tanner Cox has probably carried out routine night patrols at the Honeysuckle boat launch on Hayden Lake more than 100 times. Nothing much has ever happened. Until about 10 p.m. Thursday, Cox was at the security check when he saw a truck slowly rolling through the parking lot heading toward the boat launch. Quote, "It all of a sudden started to pick up speed and went straight into the lake, which I didn't believe actually happened at first," Cox said. His actions that followed and those of two other KCSO deputies are credited with saving the life of the 91-year-old driver. All three men jumped into the dark, icy water as the truck drifted deeper. Quote, "In that situation, extremely dangerous," said KCSO Sergeant Justin Arts, who has experience in cold water rescues. The water was 37 degrees and the air temperature was 21. Art said Friday that with 100% certainty, the man would have died without the response of the deputies. Quote, had they not been there, I believe with my whole of heart that they would have been, that would have been the case, he said. But because they were there, he's with his family today. Cox said he expected a vehicle to actually go into the water, quote, "and then it did right in front of me," he said during a press conference. "So it caught me off guard and I had to almost double take it first to make sure that it was a vehicle that went into the water." Cox called for backup and ran to the truck, reaching it within seconds. The elderly man behind the wheel seemed to be in shock and had a dazed look on his face. When the man took his foot off the brake, the truck rolled further into the water. Quote, "I was just trying to keep his attention on me so that he wouldn't take his foot off the brake," Cox said. A minute later, deputies Cody Reagan and Zach Perry arrived. They had to act quickly as the truck was nearing the point where the ramp drops off into deeper water. Quote, "I could see the deputy Cox was just trying to get verbal communication with him, and there was just no response," Reagan said. "As I got into the truck and opened the door, the truck was actually starting to go deeper into the water and submerged," Reagan said. "So at that point, he didn't have an option, and he was coming out." Reagan grabbed the man and pulled him free, but the water was too deep for him to stand. Quote, "He couldn't touch where he was at," Reagan said. Reagan pushed the man about the midpoint of the truck bed when Perry grabbed him. Quote, "I just received him and started pulling him back in," Perry said. All three deputies brought the man to shore, who still seemed to be confused. The man, a Coeur d'Alene resident, was transported to Kootenai Health, where he was treated for hypothermia and was recovering, according to KCSO. The investigation determined that alcohol was not a factor and that the male was just confused and lost. Art said the deputies acted courageously under pressure. Quote, "As it got more dangerous, that's when they jumped into action. Not that it wasn't dangerous to begin with," Art said. "But as the truck started to roll away, the window to save him got shorter. They all jumped in." Congratulations to those deputies. Good work on saving that man. I think that's, it's one of those happy stories where it had a good ending, and the folks involved, you know, they were just doing their job, but glad they were doing their job at that exact time and that exact place, because it sounds like it definitely could have been worse. All right, moving on. Fugitive caught after multi-state crime spree. This is by myself and Kay Thornbrew. After a week-long multi-state manhunt, law enforcement arrested an, quote, "armed and dangerous fugitive who was caught hiding in a camper in western Montana." Jesse Spitzer, 30, of Sultan, Washington, was wanted for a string of alleged burglaries and vehicle thefts in Washington and North Idaho. He reportedly went on the lam after he was suspected of stealing a vehicle in East Snohomish County last Friday. Police and canines chased Spitzer into the woods near Gold Bar, Washington, the following day, but he escaped. He reappeared last Sunday after a car crash in Chelan County, but evaded authorities again. Post Falls police responded Wednesday morning to a report that a firearm had been stolen out of a vehicle on Clearwater Loop. Meanwhile, a nearby resident reported a suspicious person approaching the neighbor's house. This guy... So we'll get to the part here in a second where I jump in, But man, this guy has been, he's just one crime after another. Law enforcement located the suspect identified as Spitzer. He allegedly brandished a firearm and threatened to shoot himself if officers didn't leave. Spitzer reportedly led police on a foot chase, running through yards and jumping fences in the Woodbridge subdivision. Post-fall special response team responded to a residence on Linwood Court, where Spitzer was believed to be hiding in a shed. Police said they found two firearms and other evidence, but not Spitzer. Officers from multiple agencies caught up with Spitzer and Kellogg on Thursday night. Spitzer reportedly fled along eastbound I-90 in another stolen vehicle with police in pursuit. After a Shone County deputy deployed spike strips near Osborne, Spitzer continued into Wallace. He allegedly shot at police during the high-speed chase. In Wallace, Spitzer reportedly jumped out of his damaged, still-moving vehicle on Front Street, that would be Bank Street rather, and carjacked a couple at gunpoint. Wallace resident Leia Lutich-Leginza said she was stunned and when Spitzer was pulled her and her husband out of the truck. Quote, he jumps in the driver's seat and points a gun at me and it's like, get the fuck out of the truck, she said. So I did. As Spitzer sped off in the stolen truck, he allegedly fired at police again. The vehicle he had abandoned continued to roll down the street and finally crashed into a snow berm. Law enforcement chased Spitzer over Lookout Pass and into Montana. After the Montana Highway Patrol disabled Spitzer's vehicle near the town of Haugen, he allegedly threatened officers with a handgun and bolted. Police arrested Spitzer around 9 a.m. Friday after finding him hiding in a camper near the $50,000 Silver Bar and Motel. In 2011, a 19-year-old Spitzer pleaded guilty to attempted murder with a deadly weapon and burglary after reportedly shooting at a sheriff's sergeant while trying to avoid arrest in Nevada. He was sentenced up to 22 years in prison and only served 8 of that. Boy, so this woke me up in the middle of the night Thursday. I ended up driving out to Wallace and meeting with the couple that had been robbed. They're actually friends of mine. And I was able to speak with them. Thankfully, they're all right. And thankfully, Spitzer was arrested. But yeah, he didn't seem like he had any intentions of laying low. This guy was continuing to commit crimes until he was going to get caught. At least it seems on the surface that was his plan. Or maybe he didn't even have a plan. I don't know. But in any case, yeah, I was was first on scene to that the middle part of that where he made his little during his long crime spree. I was able to pick it up a little bit of it in the midway point in the Silver Valley. It's a great time to sell your house because inventory is low. Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty is a lifelong resident of North Idaho. She's a local realtor who is connected and knows every nook and cranny in our beautiful community. Contact Julie at 208-659-1764. She is your best friend in real estate. Moving on to Sunday, January 30th, headlines. Smoke is cheap in Idaho. This is by Devin Weeks. Idaho has made yet another top 10 list. This one is far from glorious, but things could be worse, especially for cigarette smokers in Washington, D.C. A recent Wallet Hub study ranks Idaho as the ninth state in terms of how much money smokers spend and lose out on in their lifetime. According to, quote, the real cost of smoking by state, an average Idahoan who smokes spends $1,841,266 on the habit in the course of his or her life. That's so much money on something so dumb. Sorry, smokers out there. I think at this point, even if you are a smoker, you know it's not very smart. I think everybody's okay with that. I as somebody who's related to people who, you know, smoke pretty consistently, even they know that it's not smart. It's not only is it not good for you, but obviously it's very expensive. That's $105,821 in out-of-pocket costs of cigarette purchases, more than $1.1 million in financial opportunity costs calculated by the amount of return a person would have earned by instead of investing that money in the stock market in the same period, and $135,466 in healthcare costs per smoker. I'm sure it's much more than that. I feel like it should be more than that. In a year, an average smoker in Idaho will spend more than $38,300 on the habit. There are people who don't even make that money in a year. Like, that's incredible. Quote, I have worked in tobacco prevention and satiation for 14 years and greatly empathize with the individuals and their journey to quit tobacco products, Panhandle Health District Tobacco Prevention and Control Coordinator Linda Harder told the press. Quote, we have made progress in reducing smoking rates. However, some of this has been offset by an increase in vaping, especially among youth. Well, I wonder if that's included in this. If it is, then that's interesting. Naturally, smokers in states with less expensive cigarettes will spend less. According to BalancingEverything.com, D.C. has the highest cigarette tax by state at $4.50 a pack. Idaho averages $5.41 per pack total, including tax. Other states on high on the list with cheaper smokes are Georgia at an average of $5.39 per pack, Mississippi at $5.34 per pack, and Missouri, which has the lowest national average price of $5.25 for a pack of cigarettes. Accompanying D.C. at the bottom of the list are New York at an average of $12.85 a pack, Massachusetts at $9.95 per pack, and Connecticut at $9.52 per pack. Money isn't the only cost associated with tobacco products. The Centers for Disease Control cites smoking as the leading cause of preventable death. More than 16 million Americans are living with a disease caused by smoking. For every person who dies because of smoking, at least 30 people live with a serious smoking-related illness. In Idaho, a smoker will spend an average of $2,822 on healthcare in 1 year. Oh my, just yawn just came out of nowhere. According to the Wallet Hub research, quote, Panhandle Health District offers several popular tobacco cessation programs, including a three-call program, a teen class, and the diaper resource program, which is an incentive program to encourage sustained quit after completing the three-call program. Harder set. The three-call program provides one-on-one coaching from a certified health educator and free nicotine patches, gum, lozenges, as well as other helpful quitting tools. Visit panhandlehealthdistrict.org/quitting tobacco or email Harder at lharder@phd1.idaho.gov for help kicking the tobacco habit. Yeah, smoking, that's, I think I gave my comments on that. Smoking is very expensive and not good for you. If you are quitting, or you should, if you do smoke, I recommend you quit. You know, it's not good for anybody involved. Moving on, Monday, January 31st, young, professional, and exceptional. This is by Hannah Neff. Young leaders and professionals cross the red carpet into a room filled with shimmer and sparkle for a night to celebrate them. Quote, I want to thank and congratulate every single person who won, said Judge Chris Cochran, a self-employed consultant. It's because you deserved it, because you pursued your dreams. It's because you gave back to your community. Cochran was one of five judges for the Kootenai County Young Professionals 2021 Top 30 Under 40. Saturday evening, the winners were celebrated during a dinner at the Standcraft Jet Center. Quote, it's good to be here with so many young people doing so many things in such an amazing community, said winner Heath Wells of Hensley Wells PLLC. The KCYP Top 30 Under 40 is an opportunity for community members to nominate young professionals to be rewarded for outstanding service to the community, business accomplishments, and more. Quote, I was excited and a bit surprised, said winner Ashley Yates, business development representative for Alliance Title. Quote, it doesn't matter how hard you work or how much you give. It's always humbling when you are recognized for it. Yates received the award in 2017 as well. For the 2021 winners, the judges selected 30 winners from 131 nominations. Sydney Stinson, public relations chair for KCYP, said the judges worked hard to narrow down the nominations to 30 winners. Quote, we have an incredible group of young professionals, from teachers to lawyers to healthcare workers, and even underrepresented industries like electricians, event planners, Stinson said. Stinson said a top 30 under 40 winner is someone who is going above and beyond for their community, whether it be in their professional career or what they're doing in their off hours. Shane Solza, an employee for Amazon and first-time winner, said his initial reaction to receiving the award was a genuine shock. Quote, after several years of hard work in my personal and professional life, I really felt seen by many community, and I'm truly honored to have been selected as one of the 30 truly amazing individuals of Kootenai County, he said. It's awesome. That sounds like the full. So if you're curious of all the people, Hannah listed out all of the winners in this story. So just go and check out the full story on CoeurDelainePress.com. Congratulations to all the winners. It's definitely a cool organization, and everybody on there seems like there's a diverse group. You know, it's not just from one specific type of people or group. It's everybody all over the map for different professions. Moving on, Tuesday, February 1st headlines, Little activates National Guard. This is by Bill Buley. Governor Brad Little activated the Idaho National Guard on Monday for the fourth time during the pandemic to alleviate the impacts of COVID-19 in Idaho. Little activated 75 Idaho National Guardsmen to assist primary health and the Idaho Department of Correction, which are experiencing higher patient counts and staffing shortages because too many employees are absent from work due to COVID-19, according to a press release. Little said he also secured 503 additional personnel through a state contract to assist Idaho hospitals. Quote, the strain on healthcare, schools, businesses, and government from the spread of COVID-19 is a reminder that we are not out of the pandemic, Little said. Cooney Health had 103 COVID inpatients on Monday, with 12 in critical care and one pediatric patient. It reached a high of 150 COVID-19 patients in early October, then dropped to a low of 36 in early January before the latest surge attributed to the Omicron variant. Quote, we are pleased to see the governor's announcement today that additional help is on the way to Idaho hospitals, according to a statement from Cooney Health. Many of us face the same issues of high patient volumes and strained labor force. A military medical team helped with COVID-19 patients at Kootenai Health last year. Doctors and nurses and therapists were among those who began their duty in September and continued into November. Kootenai Health did not know Monday what Lil's announcement was meant for it. Quote, we are working closely with the state to learn how our organization will benefit from this announcement, a statement said. The state has provided more than $50 million to expand healthcare capacity during the public health crisis. Funds have gone to many areas, including to relieve staffing shortages, expand monoclonal antibody treatment facilities, and increase COVID-19 testing in schools. The Panhandle Health District reported 345 new COVID-19 cases Monday. It also has nearly 5,000 backlog cases. Deaths in the PHD contributed to the virus totaled 841, with 521 of those from Kootenai County. The state reported 2,581 new cases on Monday, with more than 42,000 outstanding positive laboratory results that are pending local public health district review. It reported 146 people were hospitalized statewide on Saturday. The surge in new cases is blamed primarily on the Omicron variant, which is considered more contagious but causes milder symptoms. 27 Omicron cases have been identified in Kootenai County, according to the state website, but the figure is believed to be much higher. State officials continue to call on people who get vaccinated and boosted and said not only are there variants like Omicron to contend with, but now a subvariant of Omicron. It's not good. Sounds like help is on the way, though, with the National Guard. I have seen them out and about. So always, hey, anytime hospitals can get more help, whether it be in any situation, it's definitely a good thing. Moving on, teens plead guilty in attack. This is by Kay Thornbrew. Three teens have pleaded guilty for their roles in an attack at a gas station, while the woman who allegedly enlisted them to beat someone with a baseball bat is expected to stand trial in April. Oh, I remember reading about this. Dax Hessler, 18, of Hayden, pleaded guilty to aggravated battery, a felony punishable by up to 15 years in prison. Two other teens, whose names have not been released because of their minors, pleaded guilty to the same charge. Tracy Bremner, 34, of Athol, is charged with aggravated assault, a felony, for allegedly threatening a man at knife point. The charges stem from last October when an Athol man said he was jumped by a group of teens at a gas station. Security footage showed that the man parked at a gas pump around 9 p.m. when an SUV pulled up and boxed him in. Four teens, three boys and a girl, jumped out of the SUV, according to court documents, and swarmed the man's truck. The teen girl reportedly hit the man in the head with a baseball bat, causing him to fall on the ground, then continued to beat him. The group kicked him and stomped him, police said. When the girl threw the baseball bat at the man, he said he grabbed the weapon and, quote, fought his way back to his feet. One of the teens, later identified as Hessler, allegedly attempted to stab the man. The man reportedly hit one of the teens with a bat before he reached to his truck and drove off. A gas station employee told police he witnessed the event but didn't contact law enforcement, quote, because he didn't think he had to. Okay, that's not necessarily the greatest reasoning, but okay. The victim said Bremner came to his residence the night of the attack and threatened him with a knife. He said the teens also came to his residence where they smashed the windows of his truck and slashed his tires. Police determined that Bremner was the registered owner of the SUV the teens were driving, which was found stashed in a wooded area with the plates removed. Bremner had housed numerous minors in a trailer on her property, including some of the teens identified as suspects in the gas station incident records show. When contacted by police, Bremner said the Athol man had hit her friend. She allegedly said she wanted the teens, who she described as her kids, to intimidate the man, so she provided them with the keys to her car. Before police obtained a warrant for Bremner's arrest, she allegedly fled the state. She was later arrested in Shoshone County, posted on a $100,000 bond. Oh, out here in Shoshone. Okay. Prosecutors originally charged Bremner with criminal conspiracy and injury to a child, both felonies, but dropped the charges after a judge ruled they had failed to meet the burden of proof needed to bind Bremner over to district court. She is expected to stand trial for aggravated assault in April. She has pleaded not guilty. Police identified Hessler and three other teens as suspects in the case. Hessler allegedly admitted to wielding a knife during the incident, as well as to stomping and kicking on the man. He is originally charged with aggravated battery, battery with intent to commit robbery, and criminal conspiracy, all felonies. Prosecutors also filed a deadly weapons enhancement. As part of a pretrial settlement offer, the state dropped two of the three charges as well as the enhancement. Hessler remains in jail on a $100,000 bond. He is scheduled to be sentenced in March. The other three teens, ages 16 or 17, originally faced the same charges. The teen boys pleaded guilty to the lesser charges of aggravated battery. They are scheduled to be sentenced in April. Two of the charges against the teen girl who were dismissed as a result of her preliminary hearing. She is now charged with battery with intent to commit a serious felony with criminal conspiracy, both felonies. She is expected to enter a plea this week. Boy, what a story. That definitely sounds like something off of a, you know, a daytime movie or like a Lifetime movie or something like that, where, man, you find three teenagers to do your dirty work. That's just, whatever. It sounds like a lot of people in this situation not making a lot of smart choices. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Moves into Shoshone News Press headlines, starting with Tuesday, February 1st. Bunker Hill purchases processing plant. This is by Josh McDonald. The Bunker Hill Mining Corporation appears to be making great strides in its pursuit of bringing the historic mine back toward full production. Last week, it was announced that the Bunker Hill Mining Company had signed a memorandum of understanding with Teck Resources Limited for the purchase of its Ponderay process plant. The non-binding purchase agreement has two potential price tags for the purchase. They can either spend $2.75 million to buy the processing equipment outright, or they could go with a $3 million option that would consist of both cash and shares of BHC. However, both options include a $500,000 non-refundable deposit, which has already been paid. The process plant sits 145 miles from the Bunker Hill Mine in Medellin Falls in eastern Washington and includes a vast array of equipment and parts, including all the processing equipment that a mine would need in their mill. Local mining expert Kurt Hoffman explained to the news press that the ability to mill the ore that is extracted within the mine makes this purchase an important one for BHC. Quote, "Without a mill, you really don't have any marketable product. It doesn't allow for any large-scale production. The purpose of a mine's mill is essentially to process raw material removed from the mine and turn it into concentrates. These concentrates are then trucked off to a smelting facility to further refine the concentrates and separate the precious metals from the other minerals and impurities. Teck owns and operates one of the world's largest fully integrated zinc and lead smelting refining complexes, the Trail Operations, located in southern British Columbia. The 10,000 pieces of equipment from the Ponderay processing plant are planned to be transported to the Bunker Hill mine and assembled underground to create the mine's new mill. This new venture is an aggressive move by the company, which will allow them the opportunity to return to large-scale production. There's a little bit more to this story. I'm going to leave it right there. If you're curious on learning more about the background of the Bunker Hill mine and other moves, big moves that they've made, I would check out the full story on ShoshoneNewsPress.com. But yeah, a lot of people who are familiar with the Bunker Hill, you know, we've heard this before. Lots of owners have come and gone in the past. They move some things around, they do some good, ask for some money, and then leave. But boy, all these moves, sounds like they might be pretty serious about getting the Bunker Hill up and going again. And as anybody in the industry knows, they didn't shut down the Bunker Hill because they were out of minerals. We'll put it that way. There's definitely stuff to be pulled from the ground there. Moving on, finalists chosen for Shoshone Magistrate seat. This is also by Josh McDonald. Four candidates have been named to fill the position of Shoshone County Magistrate for Idaho 1st Judicial District. Keisha Oxendine, Luke Hagelberg, Douglas Pierce, and Lee Fisher were all announced following a closed-door meeting of the Magistrate Commission last week at the Shoshone County Courthouse. The candidates are vying for the position that was created following Judge Barbara Dugan's appointment to the Shoshone County District Court bench. Fisher is a prosecutor for Elmore County in southern Idaho and has been practicing law for 21 years in the Montana home area, mountain home area, rather. Hagelberg is the chief deputy public defender for Bonner County and has been licensed to practice law in Idaho since 2013. Pierce, a lawyer from Coeur d'Alene, has been practicing since 2002. Oxendine is the current Shoshone County prosecuting attorney and has been practicing law since earning her degree in 2007. She was first elected to her position in 2012. Magistrate judges can hear a wide array of cases and case types. They have jurisdiction to hear infractions, misdemeanors, felony preliminary hearings, probates, guardianships, conservatorships, divorces, adoptions, termination of parental right cases, habeas corpus cases, juvenile cases, and civil cases in which the amount of money in dispute does not exceed $10,000. Magistrate duties include issuing various types of processes such as arrest warrants, summons, search warrants, emergency protective orders, emergency custody orders, and certain civil warrants. While the interviews will be open to the public, the Magistrate Commission will deliberate privately immediately following the interviews, which will be held on Friday, February 4th at the Shoshone County Courthouse beginning at 10 a.m. Good luck to all involved. Looking at the qualifications here, it sounds like every one of them has some background in law. The only one that I'm familiar with is Keisha Oxendine, and Not to have a favorite on that, but I definitely, in my professional experience working with her, she's definitely shown that she's capable of it. So there you go. Watts Appliances has been providing incomparable customer service to the Sur Valley for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst. Takes us north to Bonner County Daily Bee headlines coming out of Sandpoint. Saturday, January 29th. Dover greets new council members, new mayor. This is by Anissa Keith. After a highly competitive election cycle, three Dover public officials were sworn in earlier this month at Dover City Hall. Dover residents and previous Idaho legislator George E. Eskridge was sworn in as the city's new mayor. During his campaign, Eskridge said that the three most eminent issues facing the city are improving transportation infrastructure, access to recreational amenities, and increasing driver safety when entering or turning from US 2, the only point of access to the city. In order to help alleviate these issues, Eskridge said he planned to encourage city officials to follow Dover's comprehensive plan and encourage citizen participation to chart Dover's next steps, especially with transportation improvements. Quote, "Our community of Dover is experiencing division and disagreement among citizens. My priority is to resolve these issues and bring Dover together as one town with one purpose, to come together as one community working together to solve our issues and ensure Dover's bright future for generations to come." He encourages citizens to be civically active by attending city meetings and interacting with the city's website so people can have the most up-to-date information regarding the city and important current events. Eskridge has previously served on the Bonner County Area Transportation Team and Idaho Energy Resource Authority. Also sworn into office were new council members Kim Bledsoe and Merlin Glass. During her campaign, Bledsoe was elected council president, said she was inspired to run for office out of a fierce passion for the city. The most important issues facing the city, according to Bledsoe, are sustainable growth, providing water system infrastructure, and emergency preparedness. Quote, "I believe it's important to follow our comprehensive plan in regards to guiding substantial growth," she said. "The current Dover City Council has begun the process of upgrading our community water sewer system, and it would be an ongoing project for the foreseeable future." Bledsoe is a small business owner and brings a background in healthcare and education to the council. Also sworn into office was Merlin Glass, who brings extensive knowledge to the council with 4 decades of experience in emergency services. Topics of highest priority to Glass is responsible for growth, public safety, and citizenship. All elected officials can be reached by going to the city's website of cityofdover.id.gov. Notices of upcoming meetings and agendas are regularly posted to the site. Meetings are held at Dover City Hall at 699 Lakeshore Drive in Dover. You know, I'm going to be honest here. I'm a North Idaho boy, but I don't think I've ever been to Dover. It's nothing personal. In fact, you know what? I'm going to make a trip one day. I'm going to put it on my list. Got to make it up there. Got to go to Dover. I also never been to Hope. Hope and Dover. Need to go to those places. I'm sure they're just wonderful. And yeah, that's all I got on that. Man is sentenced in sex offense case. This also by Anissa Keith. A Sandpoint man was sentenced on charges of rape, lewd conduct, and 2 counts of injury to a child on Friday. Mantra K. Keenan Robinson, 19, will spend the first year of his 3 to 10 year sentence in the court's retained jurisdiction program for events taking place in the summers of 2019 and 2021. Also known as a writer, the court's retained jurisdiction program is an alternative form of sentencing. Robinson was sentenced for 4 separate sex offense cases, boy, a lot of alliteration in that one, in front of First District Judge Barbara Buchanan on Friday. Original charges against Robinson were 4 counts of rape, 6 counts of lewd conduct, and a count of child sexual abuse. Many charges were changed or dismissed through the court process. Robinson took 2 separate plea agreements on September 24th and January 6th, pleading guilty to a count of rape, a count of lewd conduct, and 2 counts of injury to a child. Quote, "The court was so outraged that we released you with conditions, and then we had another violation," Buchanan said. Oh boy, that's just another example. People getting some sort of treatment and them abusing the privilege. Restore your smile, restore your confidence. Complete Dental Care delivers quality dental care and complete satisfaction with the state-of-the-art technology that guarantee a positive dental experience, a bright smile, and restored confidence. Schedule your appointment today. Call 208-682-4540. Complete Dental Care is located at 418 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg, Idaho. To learn more, visit CompleteDentalNW.com. Moving on to Tuesday, February 1st headlines, City Works to Blend Housing, Airport. This is by Emily Bonsant. A proposed development within the Sandpoint Airport's inner critical zone has been rejected by the Sandpoint City Council. The project, which took up several hours at the council's January 19th meeting, would have allowed for 107 multifamily development on 6.35 acres at 425 Schweitzer Cutoff Road. After the end of the lengthy discussion, the council voted 4-1 in support of the appeal and against the project. Councilman Jason Welker abstained due to his serving as planning and zoning chairman at the time of the project was presented to the council. While council members expressed appreciation for the concept, they also expressed concern over how it could impact the airport. Councilman Andy Grote said that while developers had a good product and had been compelling arguments for the project, the location was wrong. In attempting to solve one problem, Grote said the solution would cause another. In this case, he said the city's commitment to the airport supersedes the development and was agreed upon before the regional and national housing crisis. Councilman Joel Espiro said that both sides presented hypotheticals of positives and negatives for the community, affordable housing, more jobs, and risks. Council President Kate McAllister agreed that the council made a commitment to the airport and must follow the comprehensive plan, but said she remains passionate about the need for affordable and workforce housing. Councilman Justin Dick said that he understands the housing need as he pays rent for several of his employees due to the lack of housing. Councilwoman Deb Ruhl said that she wished the airport board and county had been more forthcoming with information instead of speculating what could happen. She wanted Sandpoint councilors to be updated on airport issues sooner rather than later when appeals came before the city council. Located in the southeast corner of Schweitzer Cutoff and North Boyer Roads, the proposed development was approved with conditions by the Planning and Zoning Committee on November 16, 2021. Appeals were sent to the council by Granite Aviation LLC and Bonner County, which oversees the airport. Darren Fluke, interim city planner, presented information on the development to the council. In his presentation, he said the adoption of the current comprehensive plan in December of 2009, the property was designated at a CA3 or Context Area 3, which allows for a mix of residential and commercial type land use. In October 2019, the property owners rezoned from residential single family to mixed user, Fluke said. There were concerns the property would be impacted by airport noise. Butler pointed out to the airport's noise impact zone map, which shows the proposed development is outside of the zone. When the Federal Aviation Administration was contacted about the project, they said there were no hazard to the air navigation with development at its location. Speaking on behalf of the ownership group, Derek Driggs said that he and his business partners live in Sandpoint and came up with the development to help fill the area's housing needs. The development received all clear from the FAA on the height of the structures, lighting, and code. It has 5 times the open space required and is only as 40% of the density that the population project could request, he said. At the P&Z meeting where the commission was trying to find common ground, the airport managers were asked what density would be appropriate. They came back with 0, said Driggs. This is a reoccurring theme of the airport, said Driggs. Sandpoint can't grow. The airport can't grow, leading to him want to wonder if the airport is in the right location. Andrew Berry of Granite Aviation spoke in favor of the appeal, saying the airport has lost funding in the past due to the land use issues surrounding the facility, with the nearest townhome located within 310 feet of the runway. The development could negatively impact the airport, he said. Berry also cited several safety concerns and issues raised by the project's proximity to the airport, including noise levels, airport certification concerns, and insurance. In the past 15 years, there have been 4 accidents at the airport where aircrafts have gone off the runway and towards the proposed development. Ooh, that last sentence, that's concerning. We don't need airplanes crashing into apartment buildings. As somebody who lives in an apartment complex next to an airport, granted, it's not like next to, it's not neighboring the airport. It's just like across I-90. The noise isn't really a problem. I don't think I've ever noticed it. And I've been, you know, especially during like wildfire season when the place is just buzzing, helicopters and planes and whatnot all over fueling and getting ready. But then again, I grew up in kind of an aviation family. So plane noise doesn't necessarily bug me, but yeah. Sounds like it's a complex issue. We do know that there is a housing issue here in North Idaho. So I don't know. Maybe for the sake of getting people into homes, we figure out an answer for this. But it sounds like also the airport might need to reevaluate its location. So a lot of interesting points to that. Moving on, DYW Sandpoint sets raffle program date. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. The Distinguished Young Women of Sandpoint is getting ready for this year's scholarship program. There are 11 members of the class of 2023 participating in the program. Last year, DYW Sandpoint was able to award $11,300 in scholarships through the generous support of the community, Andrea Wolf, DYW Sandpoint chairman, said. Quote, with the upcoming program from the class of 2023 fast approaching, we are again seeking your tax-deductible donations to help support the educational futures of these young women, Wolf said. To help raise scholarship funds, Wolf said the local DYW participants and officials are holding 2 fundraising opportunities. The first, a raffle for 1 of 5 prize packages. Tickets are $5 each, with prizes ranging from a 7-night stay on Kauai, Hawaii, ooh, that's cool, to a 4-night stay on the Las Vegas Strip, also very cool. Other prize packages include a half-day fishing charter with Pend Oreille Charters for 2, as well as a $100 McDuff's Brewing Company gift certificate. A 18-hole round of golf at the Idaho Club for 4 includes a cart and practice range as well for a $100 gift certificate to the Clubhouse Restaurant. Boy, these are some awesome packages. A trip to Lake Pend Oreille Cruises for 4, as well as a lake topographical map of Lake Pend Oreille Lake. Those interested in buying raffle tickets can visit DYW at Super One Foods in Sandpoint on February 11th and 25th. Participants will be at the store to sell tickets from 3:30 to 6 p.m. both days. Tickets can through your tax-deductible donations. You or your company will contribute to the educational future of young women in our community, Wolf said. Founded in 1958, Distinguished Young Women is a free program that encourages participants to reach their full individual potential through continued education by providing over $1 billion in scholarship opportunities. It encourages them to develop their self-confidence in a positive peer environment and participate in life skills workshops that prepare them for success after high school. Those interested can contact Amber Prinz, DYW Sandpoint Sponsorship Coordinator, at adtrost12@gmail.com, or contact Wolf, the DYW Sandpoint Chairman, at sandpoint@distinguisheddyw.org. Call 509-347-6095 for further information and how to become a sponsor. Donations made payable to DYW of Sandpoint, Box 2531, Sandpoint, Idaho, 83864. Ending the show with like saying something like that, it always reminded me, those who watch the show Zoom. 03154, send it to Zoom. I don't know why I remember that, and I probably got the numbers wrong, but like that, as soon as I said that, that's exactly what it reminded me of. All right, everybody. Boy, that was a long episode. Or at least I feel like it. Let me look at the timer here. 51. No, I'm actually right in the sweet spot. At least I like to think so. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.cordellinepress.com, shoshonnewspress.com, bonnercandidateb.com, or thebonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please subscribe and like and follow us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. We're listed on a bunch of them. almost all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Player FM, all the main ones, all the fun ones, all the ones that you do, that, you know, somebody in the modern tech world would use. Also give us a like and follow on the North Idaho Now Facebook page so you can see all the fun stuff we post on there. Once again, we'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Bank CDA. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com. All right, everybody, thanks again, and we'll see you on Friday.